The opinions expressed in this podcast are not necessarily a reflection of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening. Hello and welcome back to the second episode of the Pit Crew Podcast. I'm Chase, and I'm here with my co-host,
Millen.
And we're going to be talking about some new topics that we kind of briefly touched
floated
upon
a little bit last time.
Basically just talking about what everything is looking like after testing, what things are looking like going into Melbourne this weekend.
We kind of like introduced the regulations, and now we just kind of want to cover like the bigger stories and narratives surrounding the regulations post-testing, specifically to teams. But we have some very interesting things we want to go over. We have some thoughts. The biggest headline right now, I think, that I'm personally seeing is this Ferrari's year? Do they have what it takes? Because if we look at the resume post-testing, they have the start procedure down. They have the active aero loophole shenanigans down. They have nailed the technical regulations apparently to the T. Their fuel mix has been approved. It's, I think, the only fuel mix as of right now that's been approved, maybe other than Honda and Ford. But I don't know if they're producing fuel or if those teams are
outsourcing to someone else.
But as of right now, in terms of fuel, Ferrari is the only one that's got it right. Chase, what do you think is Ferrari's outlook this season?
I mean, so far it's looking positive, but then we also have to look at Ferrari's track record.
I know.
I mean, you can't look into the future without looking at the past, right?
So true. But counter argument. New regulations. Is this the start of something different?
It's a fresh slate.
I think the other thing people need to consider is how much is actually, you know, an accurate reflection of what the pace looks like going into the season. You know, we talked about this a little bit. How much is Mercedes actually sandbagging?
Yeah.
Right?
Because they're all kind of putting on
it's a weird kind of facade.
Not give away anything.
Like I'm sure people who follow like F1 on socials or whatever saw the start procedure that they do at the end of each testing session. And it looks like Ferrari is nailing it. Because for the new regulations, there's some weird new mandate where there's less revolutions you're allowed to get in the car before you start. So you don't have the full access to the turbo. It's slower than last year. It's not as it should be for most of the teams, except for Ferrari. So there was a clip, a very famous video that circulated of Lewis Hamilton in this start procedure going from 9th to 1st. And everyone's talking about, oh, well, clearly they know what they're doing. Well, how many of the other teams are making it look worse than it actually
is? And are they just really trying?
Are they actually trying, or are they trying to exaggerate the difference to kind of force the FIA's hand and change those regulations as well before Melbourne? Because I think Mercedes was absolutely doing it, because there's a rumor that they have some combustion trick in their engine. Like, everyone's got some kind of trick.
Everyone has a trick.
And I think Mercedes is really playing their cards close to their chest. So
that'll be with all the teams, I think, too. Like,
you
really
think so?
I think so. Like, even though, I mean, Aston Martin's looks particularly bad in this scenario, but
Aston Martin looks really bad, I think, because like the initial thing was like they're 40 kilos overweight and like 4 seconds behind. I understand if you're sandbagging, you make it look like you're like a second, like within a second off.
Yeah.
4 seconds? That's insane to me. I don't buy into that being sandbagging. I think there's genuinely
a problem
going on at Aston Martin, which I don't know if you saw that video of Fernando Alonso going down the straight. It sounded like the car was actively exploding.
Deteriorating.
It was disintegrating, trying to like push onto like the first straight.
Yeah.
It got onto. It sounded like it was going to go kaput.
And then in one of the, not the first hairpin, but there's like in Abu Dhabi, there's a hairpin.
Bahrain. Yes.
Bahrain testing. There's a hairpin followed by like a 90 degree. It's not quite a hairpin, but it's kind of the way it goes down.
You're talking about
and
right
uneven.
After turn one.
No.
Oh, well, I know after. What you're talking about.
Like that weird
that
kind of
straight, and then it's that turn, and then you go
turn,
down
and then down,
yeah.
And it's like it's hard. Hey, F1 video game players, it's the hardest turn on the track because it's like on an angle. So when you're turning, it's almost like one wheel's lifting off.
Yeah,
and that's exactly right, what you see
right in front of the sand trap. You mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a video of, I can't remember if it was Stroll or Alonso, doing that same turn, and it looks exactly how I look like when I'm playing the F1 video game, like crazy lockup.
Yeah. It's
and
almost
going
impossible.
Over the curb, like off limits.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. I think, but there were a lot of cars having that issue. Like, I think Carlos was having that issue. I think even a couple of the McLarens were having that issue. Like,
but I mean, it seemed like I saw
Aston
multiple
Martin
times
was
like
really
they had some
struggling.
Like, I think mainly Aston Martin, they may not be big issues, but they have a lot of
they
small
have too
issues.
Many. Yeah. Which are really holding them back, which I think is a problem.
The balance of the car.
You also had Oscar Piastri who came out and said, compared to last year, zero grip on either like the front and back ends of the car. So I imagine it's like terribly difficult to try to keep the car within track limits, especially at a turn like that. It's, dude, Baku, Castle Chicane.
Oh no.
Oh my God! It's gonna be
disastrous.
It's gonna be painful. But going on from that, so remind me again. Final prediction: you think it's too early to tell whether or not Ferrari has this in the bag?
I think it's too early to tell.
I think
honestly,
I would agree.
Just because, I mean, because some of the other teams still look okay.
Okay.
Like they look normal. Mm-hmm. The other teams that they're sandbagging. Taking in that into account, we'll be able to match Ferrari's kind of performance. So I think that their outstanding performance now is not really a good time to kind of put that as like, this is a sign. This is Ferrari's year.
But you know what else is, I think, interesting to factor is that they weren't testing the new fuels in Bahrain. So none of the cars at testing in Bahrain were running the fuel mixes that they have to.
True.
So Mercedes, with their outstanding fuel mix not approved, even though they might have been sandbagging, once that fuel mix does become a factor that they have to integrate, are we going to see a dip in performance because it's not as good as Ferrari's?
Yeah.
You know, so once again, I think it's too early to tell, but that's kind of the picture right now.
You see, yeah.
But, yeah, so with the fuel, I think Ferrari's got it. Mercedes doesn't have it. And I think if you look at Bahrain testing, it looks like Ferrari has it on paper. But like I said, I think even with them sandbagging, unless they get that fuel mix down, it's going to be problems.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was also curious, and I don't think we talked about this, but it's hard to predict what's going to happen to McLaren. Like, McLaren, to me, is in such a gray spot right now where, obviously, coming off the back of two constructors in a row, they got the biggest prize pool, all the money, the smallest amount of time in the wind tunnel, but you'd think with all those resources,
they'd be able to get
ahead of the regulations. Yeah. But it's, like you said, how many of the teams are sandbagging and hiding their true performance? How many are putting it all in display? And what does that mean for McLaren? Because I think Oscar and Lando each topped, like, one of the sessions that they were in individually.
Yeah.
But
I know Oscar had for, I think, like, day two or something.
Yeah, either the first week of testing or the second one.
Yeah.
Something like that. But it's tricky to predict what's going to happen with McLaren because, obviously, a Mercedes customer not producing their own fuel mix, but are there sort of workarounds with the aero that they figured out or something? Like, the big story right now is the Ferrari rear wing. I saw something really funny that was, like, everyone congratulating Ferrari on this innovative thing, but then just realizing that they put it in backwards. So, who knows? Maybe happy accident. But it does seem like that's the innovation part.
Yeah.
Do we think that's going to get outlawed? Surely not.
Surely not. But then I think a lot of the teams are going to have problems, and then one team is going to come up with something, and it's going to be like,
no, but you can't do that.
But you can't do that. But they, it's not that there's anything that says they can't, but they'll modify the rules so that they can't.
They can't.
I think now is probably an appropriate time to discuss our predictions for the 2026 season.
I know this whole episode we've basically been saying about every single topic we've brought up, it's too early to tell, but we're still going to do early predictions. First off, I think they were the favorite going into it. The books, sports betting books, would tell you, put your money on Mercedes. I have them at number one. I think they're going to figure out the fuel issue. I think Toto Wolff is, you know, very experienced in new regulations. I think Mercedes has always been kind of the team that is the best adapted whenever new regulations come around. They figure it out somehow. I think they're a solid pick for number one.
For sure. I think Mercedes is always a solid bet. Even if it's not your number one, it's
top three.
They're a top runner. They're always a top runner. For me, I kind of have... Okay, I have my number one, I'll just start... Also, Mercedes.
Right.
But I think the rest of mine are kind of similar following based off of last season's performance, which is also kind of not the thing you should do.
Right.
But I'm also just basing it off of, the amount of, R&D potential that some of these teams have.
Just in terms of just how much they've made?
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's, you gotta look at the money.
Yeah.
So... for number two, I have Ferrari. I think post-testing, pre-testing, I would have said maybe McLaren or even Red Bull. Post, I think they have a lot of great new innovations they're making. I think they've got, on paper, they're the only team that's really nailed everything. So I feel confident putting them at two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, my number two is McLaren.
Okay. I hope you're right.
I hope I'm right. I hope I'm wrong in the sense that McLaren's
is
number
one.
But just based off of kind of what the weekend looked like, I mean, not that Mercedes was surprisingly better than McLaren, but I just think the driver, Norris and Oscar, just didn't really seem all that happy or comfortable with the car. So, I mean...
So you think their performance isn't going to be a complete fall off, but you think it's just going to be a little bit of...
I think it's going to be some getting used to
uncomfort with the car at first.
Yeah.
I also think that the driver pairings of George Russell and Kimi versus Oscar and Lando...
And Lando.
I think Oscar and Lando kind of nudged them out in experience, but I think Mercedes is just going to have that slight edge... In performance.
Where there's not really the drivers worrying about stuff between themselves. Because, I mean, we could have talked about this too, or the McLaren situation with the second driver all this papaya.
I mean, as much as they want to say it's no number one driver, I think once you kind of have a world champion on your team, it's kind of hard to say he's not the number one driver. Even though I think they're very equally matched in terms of talent. But, if they're not the obvious front runner, you're obviously going to have a lot more teamwork, so it'll be nice to see them just kind of feeding off each other and working together to maximize points. I think that'll be cool. But number three, I have McLaren.
Okay.
As a Mercedes customer, I think they'll still... Obviously, they're not falling back. I think they're in the right place.
I think they're safe. Yeah.
Even in testing, they look strong. I think they're kind of the dark horse right now, where they're not really the topic of conversation for a lot of people, despite being... the reigning constructors champions. I think a lot of the talk right now is very much Ferrari, Mercedes, but McLaren was right up there with them, even topping a lot of the sessions.
Yeah.
Obviously, we don't know how much Mercedes is holding back, but I think you could put McLaren at any of these top three spots and you'd have a reason to. But just going off of the headlines and the news we've heard already going into the season, I got them slotted in at third.
Yeah.
What about you?
For me, I've got Red Bull.
Oh.
I've got Red Bull in at number three. Honestly, I haven't really looked much into how their testing sessions have gone.
They're doing pretty good.
But, I mean, not hearing about it kind of says there's
something
nothing big
wrong.
Yeah,
yeah,
and, I mean, just the the driver pairing that they've got going on there, I mean, obviously they have four-time world champion
Max Verstappen.
And
Isaac Hadjar. Who did good.
He did pretty good. Yeah. I will say I was happy
yeah,
for
his podium at Racing Bulls.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that Red Bull second seat curse here to claim
yet another soul? I was just about to ask you that.
You know, Mark Webber, then we got Daniel Ricciardo, Daniel Kvyat, Yuki,
Sergio Perez.
Is he going to be claimed by Red Bull second seat?
I think he is definitely in a better spot starting out, just considering the fact that new regulations, they have a chance to not make the car so much in Max's perfect vision,
yeah.
Kind of because it's just a clean slate.
Yeah.
But do I think we're going to get there? Probably, but because it's the first year,
Isaac probably has
a little bit of a buffer before it's full Max mode.
Yeah.
But I'm not mad at that. At third, you can't really deny Max Verstappen. He's going to get points regardless, no matter what. I think I don't really know what the outlook on the Ford engine is. Like you said, there isn't really much to be said, which I think is a good thing in itself.
Exactly.
So, yeah, not a bad pick. For number four, I have Red Bull.
Okay.
I think similar reasonings that you did, but I just bumped McLaren up a spot. I think, you know, the top four teams are always going to be as they are, Red Bull, McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari. But I just think Isaac Hadjar, as good as he did, still kind of, you know, only in his second year, mistakes are bound to happen with new regulations.
And who knows with the reliability down the road of that Ford engine.
Exactly.
It looks real.
That's a great point.
Okay and good right now, but until
long runs are one thing in testing. Like I said in the last episode, you are never testing for a DNF.
Yeah.
You never know what's going to happen.
Number four, I've got an idea.
Okay.
I am going to put Ferrari.
At four?
At number four.
Okay, interesting.
Ferrari at number four, just because I think, even with all the stuff I said before, it's too soon to tell, and it doesn't really mean, like, it could just be them at full tilt. That's all they have. It shouldn't be ignored that they're doing quite well, or that their outcome looks quite positive.
Uh-huh.
So I think for number four, I'm going to put Ferrari, and then number five, I'm going to put the Racing Bulls.
But is fourth place for a team like Ferrari considered a positive outcome?
No, not at all. I didn't say that, but I mean...
Okay.
That's
I'll say my fifth and sixth. Okay, so you're putting Racing Bulls in at five.
Yes.
At interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then give me
five and six. For me, I have I got Williams at fifth.
Okay.
I think right after Toto, I think Africa by Toto, I think James Vowles is kind of killing it as team principals. And if team principal, if you look at the leaps they made since he took over, the jump from 24 to 25. I think we're in for an Oscar Piastri-type jump in performance and scale and experience from 25 to 26, where it's going to look vastly different. I'm hoping. They had some situations going into testing, like the first week in Bahrain or Barcelona or something like that, but I think they've got it down. I think Albon and Sainz, it's one of the more experienced teams on the grid.
Yeah.
They're both solid drivers. I see them having a really strong chance to come out leading the midfield.
The perfect mid-tier team,
I think,
in mid-tier lineup. Like, they're just
solid,
very consistent, good performance.
And also, like, if you look at last year, they just got super, like, unlucky. Like, how many points did they lose just because of a random Sainz DNF on a Sunday afternoon? Or Albon, I think they were seriously plagued by issues. But if you look at the performance, like, two podiums for Sainz in his first year.
It's there.
The
driver performance is there.
Yeah.
So I
feel comfortable putting them in at five. For six, I got Aston Martin.
Okay.
I think you said you wanted to mention this, but Adrian Newey is a factor. I think whatever issues are plaguing them now hopefully are not an issue going all the way forward.
Yeah.
But I believe in them. I believe in Newey. I was telling my other buddy who also watches F1 that I have faith in them going into it because of Newey, and even with these setbacks, I still have faith in Newey. I think he's, you know, read his book, people. There's a reason why he's
book.
Yeah?
I haven't read it yet.
There's a reason why he was so successful with Red Bull. I think he still has it in him. And especially as team principal, I think that's a great kind of input you need. So much, like, just away from, like, the business and the cutthroat, like,
with
driver side of it.
Yeah.
It kind of infuses him, like, he understands more what the engineering team needs. So I think that's a good call. But what about you? Who do you have at six?
So at number six, I also have Aston Martin.
Oh, okay, sweet. This is the second time we've aligned.
Yeah, so our first, the first Mercedes and then the rest were different, but Aston Martin at number six, okay. We seem to agree
okay.
on. Kind of the same exact thing with Adrian Newey. Car may look ugly now, but I'm a firm believer in, like, change. After I saw the 2021 McLarens were, like, oh, tractor slow. And I think even 2022. And then 2023, the first couple races were...
But then
they came back, and, like, by the end...
Even Red Bull, like, last season.
Yeah.
The leaps Red Bull made, where in the beginning they didn't seem like Max was really in it. And then by the end, they had found so much pace just in upgrade packages that... they were in it again suddenly, and Max lost by 2 points.
Yeah. And then in seventh, I have Williams.
Okay.
Not to necessarily say that I don't think they'll do great and that they're on the bottom end of the middle runners, but I just think that there's a lot more potential, like, with all the new regulation stuff, a lot of R&D has to go into making the car right. And with the experience that some of the other teams have compared to Williams, as well as some of the money, I just think that some other teams deserve the spot above Williams.
I think that's a good point, because, like, even though they'll probably adapt very well, they might just need the first year as kind of like a growth period to understand the regulations. And then I think... 2027, 2028 is when they hit their stride. So I think that's I think that's fair for Williams.
I think outperform the cars.
Okay, fair. For my number seven, I have Racing Bulls. As a sister team, they won't obviously be up to Red Bull standards, but they will be kind of floating around right in the middle of the midfield. For eight, this is where I'm going kind of cuckoo bananas. I have Audi.
Whoa.
I think part of it is coming from me wanting to see Audi do good. So it's pure hopium that I'm putting Audi up there.
In my number eight, I have Cadillac.
Okay.
And I'm unsure. I don't know that that's a safe bet. It's just a gut feeling.
Yeah. Well,
because they're full-blown new entry into this.
Yeah.
My ninth, I have Haas.
Okay.
I really... like the change that I've seen from when the new team principal, when he took over. That was 2024, but I just think some positive changes with this guy. It
kind
of seems like everyone's got their roles and they know what they're doing and they understand what they have to do.
So I had Haas at 9 as well.
Awesome.
I'll just close it out 10 and 11.
Okay.
I feel like, so number 10, I have Alpine. I think they're just kind of there. They make just enough every year to stay in it. But I think Cadillac is purely last simply because I think they're going to be last, but the performance will match, if not be better than Alpine. They are just going to get unlucky because they are a new team. But I think you could easily see Cadillac's spot at the bottom shoot up a couple ranks in the next few years. Okay, so what about you? What are your bottom two?
Yeah, my bottom two, so Audi in my number 10.
Okay.
Just,
fair.
I mean,
it's the legacy,
there,
the history.
The legacy. And then in 11th, Alpine. In 11th,
okay.
Dead last.
Not too far off.
Yeah.
I think that's fair. But that about does it for our second episode. Thank you so much for sticking with us. We are really looking forward to the next one because it's going to be post Melbourne. We'll be able to have some more substantial things to talk about. And we look forward to it. Thank you so much for joining us. This is the Pit Crew Podcast. I am Millen, and I'm joined by
Chase.
And we will see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.